This is CBS Eye on the World with Malcolm Holein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batchelor. Immediately to Jonathan Schanzer, Senior Vice President for Research at FTD. And we're looking at the World Cup. It's going to dominate the news for sports fans these next days. But where it is a story within a story. The place is called Qatar. It is an emirate. It's on the Gulf, and the beautiful moon hangs over the Gulf, and it's quite magical to visit. However, behind all the magic is a lot of hard policy, much of which is directed against allies of the United States and even the United States. To understand the tangle here, we begin by saying, Jonathan, the World Cup in Qatar, how did it come to be in Qatar? This isn't the natural place I would choose for sports affairs, given that the temperatures can approach the surface of Venus. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. It is absolutely an unlikely place to hold a soccer tournament. In fact, the World Cup, as I understand it, has never been held in late November before. It's usually held in the summer in a more temperate climate. The Qataris, after securing the World Cup, were able to move the dates so that the soccer players could play in greater comfort, perhaps, you know, not having a stroke on the field because of the heat. But in terms of how the Qataris were able to secure the game, this tournament, there's a terrific book that I would recommend to all your listeners. It's called The Ugly Game. It's authored by Heidi Blake and Jonathan Calvert. It came out in 2017, and the authors, in painstaking detail, allege that there was one person who bribed his way to the Qataris winning the bid. His name was Mohammed bin Hammam. I don't know if anyone knows where he is to this day, and I don't know if he's actually responded to the arguments made by Blake and Calvert. But basically, the book asserts that the Qataris spent ungodly amounts of money all around the world in order to grease the palms of FIFA. And there are a lot of people, by the way, to this day, who say that FIFA remains one of the most corrupt organizations on the planet, that there are no rules governing how bids are won. But the Qataris certainly figured out for themselves how to play the game.
Malcolm, you have a question.
There's so many aspects of this that the Qatari-U.S. relationship, Qatar's designation as the state sponsor of terrorism. Where does it stand today? Is Qatar considered an important ally of the U.S.? Is it a state sponsor of terrorism? Have they made any changes to improving their both internal and external relations?
Unfortunately, my answers will not be particularly positive. On the one hand, the Qataris do host the Al Udeid Air Base. It is the Combined Air Operations Center, the forward base for the U.S. Air Force in conducting counterterrorism strikes in places like Iraq or Syria or Afghanistan. And for that reason, it's very valuable. And also, I would say for that reason, the Pentagon has been an advocate of the government of Qatar. On the other hand, I can say with certainty that the Qataris continue to look to turn a blind eye to the presence of terrorist groups and terrorist financiers that operate on their soil. In some cases, these people are welcome. We know that Hamas, for example, terrorist organization, has long held an unofficial headquarters inside Qatar. The Taliban have their embassy there and have for quite some time. The Muslim Brotherhood is very active in this country. In fact, the Qataris were promoting the Muslim Brotherhood throughout the years of the Arab Spring. We know of ISIS figures that are based in the country, Al-Qaeda figures that are based in the country, and yet they are somehow still seen as an ally of the United States and have not been designated as a state sponsor of terrorism.
On the puzzle, Jonathan, I visited Qatar 1 January, after the boycott by the Gulf Cooperation Council's leading members. I believe that would be Saudi Arabia and UAE. That was a dispute that puzzled me at the time, and I believe some of it's been resolved. Is that part of the tangle of Qatari affairs, that they're not popular, but they are generous with their money?
very generous with their money. I think we can address that. I mean, this town where I live in Washington, the Qataris have bought one city block of very high value real estate. They spend money to keep the metro going when the Capitals are playing in the playoffs. They sponsor the congressional baseball game every year. They've got just about every white shoe law firm and lobby firm on retainer. And so they're very hard to tackle. They're hard to touch. And so this is what they do. By the way, they do it in London. They do it in Paris. They do it in most major capitals where influence can be bought to one extent or another. They have found a way of getting around that bad rap of supporting terrorism. And the surrounding Gulf countries have taken note of it. The Saudis have, you know, quietly, I think unbeknownst to Democrats in this town at any rate, they've gone through significant amount of reform. They're no longer sponsoring terrorism. The Egyptians have definitely been very unhappy about the way that Qatar has been sponsoring the Muslim Brotherhood. You have a whole bunch of Arab countries that have grown very frustrated with the Qataris, with the way that they wield their influence and the way that they ignore a lot of the challenges that face some of those neighboring countries around the Middle East.
Does Iran factor into Qatar's relationships, money? Either way, do they front for Iran? I know that there were many accusations in the past and that even in recent days, linking the two, and one of the reasons why the other countries are so angry at Qatar, aside from their undermining regime, supposedly. And secondly, here in the United States, the stories came out about the detectives hired by Iran, China. Is Qatar involved in that as well and doing spying on people here?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Qataris have, as we understand it now, in the lead up to the World Cup, have gone out and hired a bunch of former intelligence officials, including some from the United States, former FBI, former CIA. And their goal has been to basically make sure that critics of the regime are not able to get the upper hand as they head into this World Cup. They're going to have several weeks of dealing with really bad press. I mean, I'm actually surprised at how the press has turned against the Qataris, especially because they have really bought a lot of influence over the years. It's apparently not given them the protection that they wanted. But we're seeing evidence of spies that have been deployed by the Qataris all over the world, but in particular, an attempt to contain some of the fallout heading into the games. Now, as far as Iran is concerned, it's a murky question. I mean, on the one hand, the Qataris and the Iranians, they share a gas field, and the Qataris are able to draw from it. The Iranians are not. My understanding is every time the Qataris do draw from that gas field, they do have to provide a certain percentage to the Iranians. The Arab neighbors of Qatar allege that the Qataris have grown too close to Iran. I'm not sure we've seen any direct evidence of that, but I think it'll ultimately be up to the Saudis and the Emiratis and the Bahrainis to share that information. And right now it's just unclear.
Jonathan, when I took off from Qatar to fly home, we went over Iran. I was amazed and shocked at the same time. I looked out the window and I could see Lake Urmia, where my grandparents grew up before they came here. And then I thought, boy, if we land, I'm in trouble. Now, flying over Iran, is that a normal activity in the Middle East, or is this an exceptional relationship that Qatar has with Tehran?
You know, it's funny that you asked this, John, because I have heard recently of people who've been flying to the UAE, and they have also flown over Iranian airspace, and that they have, when they have landed, they were visibly shaken and deeply concerned about what would happen were there to be some kind of mechanical failure. This, I think, is actually something that American authorities should begin to deal with, because there should be no country flying over that airspace. There should be no national airlines flying over that airspace. It could become a huge liability. And I would imagine that the Iranians are probably able to extract at least some form of payment for any of these airlines flying over their airspace. So I think an investigation is needed. We have started to ask around about this, and we've not received a satisfactory answer.
We have about a minute, Malcolm. 1 minute.
Yeah, there was a plane that was forced down with an Israeli citizen on it. and created a lot of angst, but they didn't discover it and they were able to take off. So you're right to be cautious about it. But I was wondering, in terms of how many people will actually come to Qatar, and will they, are they putting on there a major propaganda effort to convince those who come that the charges are not that valid?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people that are going to be coming. There is an attempt, you know, people are saying that it's sports washing. They've been shutting down reporters who've been trying to report on negative aspects of the Qatari hosting mechanism. They've actually invited fake fans, as they're calling them, people who are paid to give good reviews of the Qataris. So there's going to be quite a PR battle that we'll be watching over the course of the next several weeks as the games are played out.
Jonathan Shanzer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy introducing us. It's not Scheherazade. Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.